Imagine trying to buy a $50 million commercial logistics facility in Riyadh.
Right. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. But imagine doing it using just like the spare change sitting in your investment account.
It sounds absurd, right?
Completely. I mean, 5 years ago, there was literally a joke. But today, because of this massive structural shift in how Saudi Arabia is regulating real estate, it's actually become a highly viable portfolio strategy.
It really is. And, it's a profound shift in just the basic market mechanics because we're watching real estate, which is historically like the most illiquid, capital-intensive asset class on the planet, get completely sliced up and digitized.
Yeah.
And it transforms property ownership from this massive, singular, terrifying commitment into something that's highly modular.
And that is exactly what we are getting into today. We're looking directly at you, the listener, to kind of explore the mechanics behind this whole thing.
Yeah, it's a deep dive you won't want to miss.
For sure. We are digging into the rapidly growing trend of fractional property investment in Saudi Arabia. But, and I want to be clear here, our mission today isn't to just marvel at the shiny marketing hype.
Oh, absolutely not. There's enough of that out there.
Right. We're going to look under the hood. We really want to understand the actual financial mechanics, the structural risks, and how this actually fits into a mature real-world portfolio for you.
Which is so critical right now because the market is maturing incredibly fast. Investors, they don't just want the novelty of buying a fraction of a building on an app anymore. That was the first wave.
Yeah, the novelty wears off.
Exactly. Now they want to know, well, how is the yield actually generated? What are my legal protections? And most importantly, what happens when things go wrong?
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the core problem that fractional ownership solves is, frankly, pretty obvious. Buying a whole building is just way too expensive, and managing it is an absolute nightmare.
It's a full-time job.
It really is.
Yeah.
But what surprised me in the source material was the demographic that's actually using this. Because logically, you might think a modernized app-based investment model is designed for, like, the crypto crowd.
Right, the day traders.
Yeah, the aggressive risk takers. But the data shows it's actually attracting a very different demographic. It's bringing in the highly cautious investor. And I kept wondering, why is a conservative investor drawn to something so new and tech forward?
Well, it really comes down to solving one major issue, and that's concentration risk.
Okay, break that down for us.
Sure. So think about how a cautious investor operates in the normal stock market, right? They don't just take their entire net worth and dump it into one single tech company.
Right, no, they'd buy an index fund.
Exactly. They buy an index fund to spread their exposure. But in traditional real estate, you are practically forced into massive concentration risk.
Because you're buying one building.
Right. You are taking this huge amount of capital and you're locking it into one specific physical location. And that location is subject to one specific local economy, and it's totally reliant on a very, very small pool of tenants.
I mean, traditional real estate is kind of like being forced to buy an entire dairy farm just because you want a glass of milk.
That is actually a perfect analogy.
Right. Whereas fractional ownership, it basically lets you just buy the milk.
Exactly. Or, to elevate that into a more financial analogy, fractional ownership is essentially allowing investors to build a mutual fund, but for direct physical property.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're building a diversified property portfolio from your phone.
Yeah. And it allows a cautious investor to take that same, say, lump sum of capital, and instead of one house, they spread it across multiple property types. And what's fascinating here is the specific asset classes that this model actually opens up for people.
Because it's not just houses.
No, not at all. We aren't just talking about, fractionalizing a duplex in the suburbs. We are looking at massive residential complexes, commercial retail assets, and crucially, major logistics facilities and mixed-use developments.
Wait, logistics facilities? I want to stop you right there for a second. Because I can completely understand why someone, a regular person, would want to own an apartment building. Why is a cautious retail investor actively seeking out a tiny fraction of a commercial warehouse?
Well, you have to look at the macro trends in Saudi Arabia right now, particularly with Vision 2030.
Okay.
There is just this massive, massive boom in e-commerce, local manufacturing, and supply chain infrastructure across the kingdom.
Right, the whole country is scaling up.
Exactly. And logistics facilities are literally the physical backbone of that growth. They aren't glamorous, but they typically involve, long-term corporate leases, much lower tenant turnover compared to residential, and highly predictable cash flows.
Predictable cash flow. The holy grail for cautious investors.
You got it. For a regular retail investor, getting access to that kind of institutional-grade yield was pretty much impossible before. But now they can allocate, say, 10% of their real estate portfolio to logistics, maybe 20% to residential, and then grab a piece of a commercial high-rise with the rest.
Okay, conceptually, I love the diversification. It makes total sense. But let's talk about the actual how. Like, how does this actually work mechanically? So I'm assuming, I don't physically get mailed a brick from the warehouse.
No, definitely no bricks in the mail.
So how do I actually own a fraction of a building?
Yeah, so you don't own the brick directly. Mechanically, what the platform does is establish what is known as an SPV. That stands for Special Purpose Vehicle.
Special purpose vehicle. Okay.
Right. And this is essentially just a standalone legal company that is created for literally one single reason: to hold the title deed to that specific property. So when you invest on the app, you are actually buying shares in that SPV.
Let me make sure I've got this. So I own shares in a mini company, and that mini company is the thing that legally owns the warehouse.
Precisely. And that SPV is legally ring-fenced. So the rental income is paid by the tenant directly to the SPV. Then the operational expenses are deducted from that pool of money, and whatever net yield is left over, that gets distributed to you and the other shareholders as dividends.
Proportionally, right? Based on my shares.
Exactly, based strictly on your ownership percentage.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. And I want to push back on this a little bit because we need to take the rose-colored glasses off for a second.
Let's do it.
Because the big marketing hook for all of these fractional platforms is always passive income. You just sit back, tap a button, and collect dividends.
Right.
But if I'm not the one driving out there to fix the roof, and I'm not the one negotiating with the corporate tenant for that logistics hub, someone else is doing that work.
Naturally.
And that means professional management. And, professional management is not a charity. They absolutely take a cut.
Oh, a significant cut, yes.
Right. So if I am paying platform fees and then SPV administration fees, and on top of that, actual property management fees, is this passive income even worth the squeeze compared to, say, just buying a publicly traded REIT on the stock market?
And that is the exact skepticism that investors need to have going into this. The fee drag is very real, but let's compare it to a real estate investment trust. With a REIT, you are buying into a massive, totally blind pool of properties managed by a huge corporation.
Right, you just buy the ticker symbol.
Exactly. It's highly liquid, sure, but you have zero control over which specific buildings they are buying or selling. You don't know what's in the portfolio, really. But fractional ownership via an SPV allows you to target a very specific individual asset.
Oh, I see. So I can say, I want that specific warehouse on that specific street in Riyadh.
Exactly. You know exactly what street your building is on, but, and to your point, you are absolutely paying a premium for that targeted curation and for the direct management of that specific asset.
So when you're scrolling through the app, the yield that's being advertised has to be scrutinized heavily. Like, you need to know if you're looking at a gross yield or the actual net yield after the platform takes all of its administrative cuts.
Exactly. Always look for the net yield. And honestly, that leads directly into probably the biggest misconception that these cautiously optimistic investors have.
What's that?
It's this dangerous idea that rental income is somehow fixed or guaranteed.
Because it feels like a fixed income bond or something on the app.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it is a fundamental misrepresentation of how real estate actually works in the real world. Even with the best professional management in the world mitigating those daily headaches, rental income will always, always fluctuate.
Because, I mean, life happens. The macro economy shifts.
Yes. Occupancy rates change. If a corporate tenant in your logistics facility decides, that they aren't going to renew their 10-year lease, you now have a massive empty warehouse sitting there,
And it's not generating anything.
generating nothing, and you have turnover costs to find a new tenant. Or, you might have sudden operational spikes because the massive HVAC system in that commercial high-rise suddenly needs replacing.
Ouch.
Right. And those expenses are deducted from the SPV's revenue before your dividend is even calculated.
Wait, so if the expenses to fix the HVAC wipe out the rental revenue for that entire quarter, my dividend is just zero.
Correct. It could absolutely be zero for that period. Property values and rental performance are just inextricably tethered to the broader market. Real estate is exposed to local infrastructure development, shifting tenant demand, and general economic growth.
So it's not a magic money machine.
Not at all. Strong investment performance still depends heavily on the actual quality of the underlying physical property. You simply can't fractionally invest in a terrible building in a bad location and magically expect great returns just because the digital dashboard on your phone looks sleek.
Right. A bad building is a bad building, even if the app has a great dark mode.
Exactly. The physical reality still dictates the financial return.
The underlying asset has to actually be good. That makes total sense. But it brings me to another structural risk that I think people completely overlook when they use an app to invest. We can call it the liquidity trap.
Ah, yes. The liquidity trap.
Because, think about it, if I own, say, an Apple stock, right, and I suddenly need cash on a random Tuesday afternoon, I literally tap a button on my brokerage app, and it's sold in milliseconds.
Boom, done.
But if I want to sell my, you know, my fraction of a Riyadh apartment building,
yeah.
Who am I actually selling it to?
And this raises a highly important question about the reality of secondary markets on these platforms. Fractional ownership dramatically improves accessibility on the way in.
Right.
But investors often falsely assume that naturally equals instant liquidity on the way out, and it definitely does not.
Because I am essentially in a financial marriage with 99 total strangers who also own fractions of this exact same SPV.
That's actually a very apt way to describe it, a financial marriage with strangers. If you want to exit, you usually have to sell your specific shares on the platform's internal secondary market bulletin board.
Okay.
But that requires another user on that specific platform wanting to buy your exact shares at the exact price you want to sell them for.
So it's not like the stock market where there's always a buyer.
Right. It's not an automated, instantaneous market maker like a global stock exchange.
What?
If the local real estate market softens, or, you know, if that specific building has a vacancy like we talked about earlier, you might be waiting weeks or even months to find a buyer for your fraction.
Or I guess you might just have to sell it at a really steep discount just to get your capital out in an emergency.
Exactly. You take a haircut on the price for the sake of liquidity.
Wow. And what about selling the whole building? Like, if the market is absolutely peaking and it's clearly the perfect time to sell the warehouse and take our massive capital gains, who makes that call? Because I only own like 2%. I can't just force a sale.
And there is the ultimate trade-off for passive management. You completely surrender control. The decision to liquidate the entire asset is governed strictly by the rules set up in the SPV and the platform's initial terms.
So they decide.
Yes. Usually, the platform's asset managers make the call on when to sell based on their target holding period, which is typically, you know, anywhere from 3 to 7 years. As an individual minority shareholder, you are basically just along for the ride.
Okay, so if I am surrendering the decision-making power on when to sell, and I am relying entirely on their specific secondary market to provide my liquidity,
right,
then the platform I choose to use is arguably more important than the property itself.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this exact realization is what is driving the current regulatory evolution in Saudi Arabia right now.
Because the government sees this risk, too.
Absolutely. Investors are demanding far more transparency, and regulators are backing them up. It's no longer enough for a platform to just show a nice 3D render of a building and promise an 8% yield.
Mm-hmm.
Investors need clear ownership structures, transparent fee reporting, and absolute clarity on the SPV governance rules. And more importantly, the Saudi government recognizes that if these platforms scale up and eventually hold billions in retail investor capital, they pose a massive systemic risk if they aren't properly regulated.
Which brings us to REIGA, the Real Estate General Authority in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Because they haven't just let these platforms run wild in, like, the wild west of the internet. They've established what they call a regulatory sandbox.
That's right.
So explain how this sandbox actually functions for us, because it's clearly not just a playground.
Not at all. A regulatory sandbox is a highly controlled, very closely supervised testing environment. Look, the regulators know that fractional ownership is this highly innovative financial vehicle that can unlock massive amounts of capital for the domestic economy.
That's good for Vision 2030.
Exactly. But they also know that if a platform's legal structure is weak and that tech platform goes bankrupt, thousands of retail investors could lose absolutely everything.
Ah. So the sandbox basically lets regulators stress test the platforms before they get too big to fail.
Exactly. Before a platform can offer these fractional investments to the general public at scale, they have to operate inside the sandbox. Raj EA actively monitors how the SPVs are structured.
What are they looking for specifically?
They ensure that the SPV is truly what's called bankruptcy remote.
Bankruptcy remote, meaning what?
Meaning, if the tech platform itself, the app you use, goes out of business, the SPV holding the actual property remains totally intact. So the investors still legally own their shares of the building, completely independent of the tech startup.
Oh, that is crucial.
Yeah.
So the app dying doesn't mean your investment dies.
Exactly. And inside the sandbox, they scrutinize how client funds are held in escrow, how the yields are accurately distributed, and how those secondary market trades we talked about are actually executed.
So it's essentially a live fire stress test to ensure strict consumer protection and systemic stability before fully unleashing the model on the public.
That's the perfect way to summarize it.
And looking at our source material, one of the platforms currently operating within this evolving Saudi landscape is Usul Gamma.
Yeah.
Let's look at them as kind of a case study for a second here. How does a platform like Usul Gamma actually address the transparency issues we just talked about?
Well, what platforms like Usul Gamma represent is the pivot from pure accessibility to genuine institutional transparency.
Okay, unpack that.
For a very long time, real estate management was basically a black box. You handed over your money, you didn't ask questions, and you just hoped you got a check in the mail every quarter.
Right, trust us.
Right. But what modern platforms are forced to do now, partly driven by smarter investor demand and partly by those strict regulatory sandbox standards, is basically open up that black box via their digital dashboards.
So what am I actually seeing on that dashboard as an investor?
You aren't just seeing a little green number showing your dividend. You are seeing the live, updated occupancy rate of your specific logistics facility.
Oh.
Yeah. You are seeing the exact dollar-for-dollar breakdown of the property management fees. You are seeing the maintenance reserves, like exactly how much cash the SPV is currently holding back in a bank account just to fix that hypothetical broken roof we talked about.
That's incredible.
And you see the historical performance of the asset compared to the broader neighborhood averages.
I mean, it treats the physical property almost exactly like a publicly traded company issuing a quarterly earnings report.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And for that cautious investor demographic we started this conversation with, that data is literally everything.
Because it proves it's real.
Yes.
Yeah.
It allows them to continuously evaluate the quality of the investment vehicle itself. It builds immense trust. And in a developing sector like this, credible, standardized reporting is just as mandatory as the physical location of the real estate.
Which really, I think, distills this whole conversation down to a fundamental question for you listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking to deploy your own capital into this space, you have to ask yourself, are you just analyzing the physical property, or are you rigorously analyzing the transparency and the structural integrity of the tech platform managing it?
You have to do both. You absolutely have to. They are completely inextricably linked now.
You can't separate them.
No, you cannot have a successful fractional investment without a high-quality physical asset and a highly credible, legally sound platform operating it. If either pillar is weak, like if the building is great but the SPV structure is legally flawed,
right,
or if the platform is beautifully transparent but they're just buying overpriced, low-yield assets, the entire investment is compromised.
So what does this all mean? We've stripped away the marketing hype today. We've looked at the massive benefits, right? Solving concentration risk, getting unprecedented access to high-yield logistics and commercial assets, and removing the daily grinding burden of property management.
Huge benefits.
But we've also looked at the very real, very structural risks. The fee drag, the harsh reality of market fluctuations, the liquidity trap of being married to 99 other investors, and the absolute critical necessity of SPV governance.
Yeah. And what it ultimately means is that successful investing in this new digitized frontier still relies entirely on old school fundamentals.
It always comes back to fundamentals.
It really does. The mechanism of accessing the property has modernized. The technology has made it frictionless, sure. But the fundamental laws of real estate, they have not changed one single bit.
Bricks are still bricks.
Exactly. The bricks are still bricks. You still need genuine, sustained market demand for the asset. You still need absolute structural transparency from the operator. And above all, you need disciplined, long-term decision making.
Yeah.
One of the greatest dangers of fractional ownership is that because it looks like a stock trading app, people naturally start treating it like day trading.
Oh, yeah. Gamification.
Right. They expect rapid capital appreciation and instant liquidity, but real estate has always, always rewarded patience. Fractional ownership simply removes the barrier to entry. It doesn't replace the need to prioritize stable demand and sustainable multi-year growth.
It's really about maintaining a long-term mindset, even when the interface in your hand feels specifically designed for short-term excitement.
Precisely. Ultimately, there is no perfect risk-free investment structure out there. It all comes down to your personal timeline, your specific income requirements, and your unique risk tolerance.
As with everything.
Exactly. The strongest portfolios are always built from a place of balanced, informed decision-making. Fractional ownership might be the absolute perfect tool to round out your asset allocation, or it might tie up your capital much longer than you'd like. You just have to evaluate it with a clear, sober understanding of the underlying mechanics.
Which leaves us with a tremendous amount to think about for our own portfolios. We started out today talking about how this technology digitizes and slices up the physical world, right? Making it accessible to everyday investors like you and me.
We did, yeah.
But I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over. Something that takes this entirely out of the financial realm and pushes it into the physical world around us.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What is it?
Well, if fractional ownership continues to scale up at this rate, and buying a piece of a commercial high-rise literally becomes as common and as easy as buying an S&P 500 index fund. How will this gamification of real estate change the way we actually design and build our cities?
Oh, wow. That is a phenomenal question.
Right. Because think about it. For the last century, urban architecture was mostly dictated by massive corporate developers, building spaces specifically to appeal to other massive corporate buyers.
Right, institutional tastes.
Exactly. But if a developer building a new tower knows that their ultimate exit strategy is actually selling the building to 50,000 micro investors scrolling through a platform on their iPhones, does that change the architecture?
You would almost have to.
Will we start seeing buildings designed specifically for platform appeal? Like spaces that prioritize flashy, highly marketable aesthetics that look great as a thumbnail on a digital dashboard? Perhaps at the direct expense of practical long-term urban utility. I mean, it completely shifts the underlying incentive structure of city building.
It really does. It connects the psychological impulses of the retail micro-investor directly to the macro landscape of the city skyline. Literally, the algorithm could shape the architecture.
Exactly, the digital dashboard dictating our concrete reality. Just something for you to think about the next time you look up at a massive new development in your city. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.